Time to get our view from the north and even further north. He's covered Pack Seahawks tonight, NBC Sports Northwest. He's always talking Ducks. He's defending the Jordan legacy. You could follow on Twitter. The handle is at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are things in the Emerald City?
Awesome. Did you just call me the defender of the Jordan legacy?
Yes.
I like that.
I figured you would.
I'm getting that put on my business card.
West Coast. There's also a Midwest version and probably an East Coast version in North Carolina. Anyway, last night in the win against the Blazers, LeBron James passed Wilt Chamberlain for fifth on the all-time scoring list. And to me, it's like, I don't care what your loyalty or your preference is. I mean, when you're talking Wilt, that's rarefied air and just an accomplishment worth acknowledging, you'd say.
Oh, definitely. He's fifth now all-time.
Yeah.
That's absolutely impressive, especially for a guy that always looked to be a distributor as well. Clearly, he's played a long time. He didn't go to college, so that adds to his years in the pros. But he's been phenomenal, and you know he's passed Wilt. And who's next?
Michael Jordan.
And then you got Malone, Kareem, and who else? Someone else in Malone, Kareem. Who's between
Kobe.
Malone and Jordan?
Kobe.
Kobe. Wow, that's a great list.
Would
that be the greatest starting five ever? Kareem at power forward with Wilt at center, Jordan and Kobe in the backcourt, LeBron a small forward.
Oh,
Malone
man.
Off the bench of power.
Well, I'll tell you what, they might beat this year's Knicks for sure. by the way, here I know you need to prepare for these things. So if LeBron averages 27 a game, he'll pass Jordan January 19th at Houston for fourth place. So you've got 8 weeks to prepare yourself.
I'm good with that. Now, Jordan played 12 in Chicago. The Washington years don't count. And LeBron played how many, 16?
Well, LeBron, I did games. LeBron did it took him 111 games more than Chamberlain. I don't have the how many games Jordan played, because to me, that's how you really gauge it. I mean, years are one thing.
It's taken him way more games, because Jordan's career average is right around 30.
Yeah.
LeBron's is like 26, so yeah, that's not even close.
Like I said,
Jordan's still the GOAT. Move along.
All right. You know, I saw what you tweeted about the Lakers. I was actually talking about that yesterday. I mean, there's a lot of pieces there. You know, they've got LeBron. You knew there would be bumps. Some guys who haven't played together, they're young. And I get they just lost Rondo. But, man, aren't you curious to see what they'll be as the regular season ends?
Before the season, I tweeted that. Come April, the Lakers will be the second-best team in the West. And I got smashed. I kind of predicted that Houston would take a step back. So far they have, although it's early. But the bottom line is there is legit talent on that team. Some of it's young, and some of it has been dysfunctional but in the past, like Stevenson, McGee, Rondo. But someone like LeBron, who is such a good team player and so dominant, if you take some of those guys who've been dysfunctional and you put them around him, they can become less dysfunctional. It's almost like the Rodman effect when he went to Chicago. He was
right.
A circus after Detroit, and then he gets to Chicago, and he was still kind of a circus, but he did his job. And so LeBron's going to have that impact on those guys. Like, look at JaVale McGee. Look, JaVale McGee is long, athletic. He's got great leaping ability. He protects the rim. Like, he's a legit player, but he's been a clown most of his career. Well, LeBron sits him down and says, look, we can use you. You're going to start. You're going to play a lot. And he's been performing. All he needs to do is protect the rim and run the floor. And then you look at young guys like Ingram and Kuzma. And those guys are going to grow up faster around LeBron. And they're not done making moves. The Chandler move was huge. It gives him a second rim protector. So they have 2 7-footers, athletic. And he's a veteran championship guy. They're going to make some moves down the road, I believe, to add a couple more pieces to this team. And then the bottom line is, who's the best closer in the NBA right now? I mean, the last 10 years probably. It's LeBron. So if you're in a game, any game, anytime, anywhere, he can close it. So I think they're going to be dangerous.
I agree. I see a lot of people around here, they hear Lakers and their fangs go out. But as an old school Celtic hater, I always liked the Lakers, so I'm good with it. One of your other favorite topics is Durant and the Warriors.
I'd say I'm mildly obsessed with that whole thing.
But, you know, my theory here is this is how they behave when everything's going their way. They're winning championships, MVPs. It's like, what happens if they start losing? They're going to do pistols at dawn? I'm not saying it matters in the long run, but is this kind of an embarrassing look for them?
Well, first off, this kind of stuff goes on all the time on every team ever. But it's magnified because of the Twitter age and the internet.
Yeah.
And everyone's always looking for the soap opera, right? But players go at it. Every team I've ever been on in my life, and granted, high school and small college football is not the same as the NBA, but every team I was ever on, there was some kind of major dust up and brawl. And then you kiss and make up. Like, that's just part of life. So I do think it's overblown, but I love what Draymond allegedly said. He allegedly said the same thing I was saying, which is, we were winning championships without you. Don't come around here like I'm a scrub and I haven't been a playmaker my entire career. I am totally team Draymond in this. Draymond got the rebound and took off down the court to make a play like he has done for 6-7 years, however long he's been there. That's what he does. The last 5 years, I think he averages 7 assists per game. I think he's second only to Curry. So he's been a facilitator his entire career there. And so he went up court to look to make a play. He was not trying to take the last shot. If you look at him, he's about to pass it to Iguodala when someone slaps the ball away. He was not about to shoot it. All Durant had to do was sprint down court and set up for a shot, and Draymond probably would have gotten it to him. Instead, Durant showed him up and then continued it on the bench, and Draymond put him in his place. I'm 100% on Draymond's side in this. And I believe the only reason why people are pro-Durant on this is because he's Durant. He's the better player. You should have the ball. He's the scorer. BS nonsense. No. He is a bandwagon-jumping guy who knew he couldn't win the title by himself. So he's riding these guys' coattails. They don't need him. He needs them. I'm on Team Draymond.
Well, my producer has brought up an interesting question that I need to ask you. Are you Team Draymond or are you Team Anti-Durant?
I can get a jersey for both of those teams and split it and wear it both. But I would be honest. If I thought Draymond was, I mean, okay, Draymond probably shouldn't call him the B word, but I think Draymond was right in that he should. Even if Durant thought Draymond should have given him the ball, he shouldn't have showed him up like that. It's like the third week of the season against the Clippers. Who cares? It's a meaningless game. Do not show up your teammate like that. Do not act like he's submissive or subservient to you, especially when you're just a rental player. And like Draymond allegedly told him, you may not even be here next year. You're playing the free agency game. You're not committed to us. So why am I supposed to be submissive to you? Totally on his side.
All right. I like the take. That's a hot take. Mark it down. Talking with Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest. You know, I like your good or no good posts with Brianna. I know around here some eyebrows were raised when Jim Levitt got $1.7 million to be an assistant with this program. So double hot take time. Is the defense performing up to what you'd want for that kind of dough?
All right, here's the bottom line. First of all, I'm the last person to throw coaches under their bus. I've been called a coach apologist, and I'm fine with that because I do believe that people rush to judgment on coaches too often.
Sure.
And I do think Cristobal deserves a chance to build this and how he wants it, and that usually takes 3 years. So I'm all cool with that. But this team has regressed. The running game is brutal compared to past Oregon running games. And Herbert is not producing as well as great quarterbacks have produced at Oregon. And the defense has regressed from last year as well. They were 28th in the nation last year. They're 67th now. The two games they just lost, had Utah had its starting quarterback, what do you think the score of that game would have been?
Yeah, those field goals.
How many more points? They kicked 6 field goals. You think the starter doesn't give him in the end zone 3 times? So now you're going to add 18 more points to that score? And then that loss at Arizona had been struggling all season long, and you went in there and just got pounded, gave up 45 points. The defense has completely regressed. They paid Jim Levitt they gave him a $600,000 raise because the defense went from like 128th to 28th, and now it's back down to 67th. Now, You can blame some injuries. You can blame this. You can blame that. Blah, blah, doesn't matter. They're paying him for at least a top 20 defense. At least. And the other reason why I'm being critical about this is because a bar was raised, right? Isn't that why, you know, Pelham got demoted? Isn't that why Helfrich got fired? Because the bar has been raised in Eugene, and they're not supposed to, you know, have mediocre seasons. You're not supposed to be mediocre, and that's why they went out and paid all this money for defense coordinator? Yes. So, therefore, there's no way anyone can argue that they have not regressed, and there's no way anyone can argue that he is living up to that paycheck, because he's not.
All right. Hot take two.
Sizzle. Can you give me a sizzle sound?
I think
every time I give a hot take, it's a sizzle.
Yeah, we'll put that in the budget for 2019. All right, we'll try that one out.
Or at least a sound of flames going whoosh.
All right. No, we're working on it. We got our top people. The NFL. What really matters is the NFC North leading Bears. They've won three in a row. Granted, two of the wins were against the Bills and Jets.
You should have led with this.
Trubisky's having a nice year. I like their backs. I think the pickup of Trey Burton at tight end, kind of unsung. The defense, kind of young. How you liking the Bears heading into the second half?
So first, my friend, the Chicago fan that Trubisky's going to win a minimum 8 MVPs and a minimum 12 Super Bowls, okay? That's the Bears fan in me. Now, the realistic person who does cover the NFL is going to sit here and tell you that the Bears ain't beat nobody. Dude, look at the teams they've beaten. Buffalo, the Jets, Tampa, they just beat a Detroit team that's been floundering. I mean, they don't have one legitimate quality win as far as I'm concerned. Actually, their best win is probably Seattle, back when Seattle was kind of scuffling. They have Minnesota Sunday. Minnesota will be by far the leader win of the season, by far, if they win that game. Again, I have a better feel of who and what they're about. But I'm being so honest, totally honest when I sit here and say that even as a Bears fan, I'm happy where they are. But I know that they have beaten nobody.
And they still have to play the Rams, the Packers, at Minion. But they also,
of the other ones was Arizona, too, and they barely won that one. It's just not a good group.
All right. I just was figuring I'd get a real view of them from you more than anyone.
You got both perspectives.
Right, right. Well, I think the Bears will probably win 7-8 Super Bowls.
There you go.
Couple final thoughts for Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest. Biggie tonight in Seattle. I'm kind of the Bill Parcells guy because I saw you and Danny Kluppinger talking about a pet peeve of his, that you are what your record is. Pete Carroll says they're better than 4-5. What's your legit evaluation of this team?
I think they very easily could be 6-3. I think they also very easily could be 3-6. I would say that, you know, I don't think that this is a sub-500 team in the end. Two of their losses have come against one of the best teams in the league in the Rams. So if you're looking at a team with five losses and two are to a team like the Rams, and then you look at the other three, they lost at Chicago. They lost at home to to the Chargers in a good game. They're a division leader. Four of their five losses are to division leaders.
What?
The only bad loss, so to speak, would be the opener at Denver when they kind of let that one slip away. They had a chance to win that. So they have quality losses. They don't have a bunch of quality wins. As a matter of fact, they don't have one quality win. Tonight would be their best quality win. It would be tied with Dallas. So I do just kind of think this is a 500 or so team. I don't think they're necessarily better. I don't think they're worse. I think they kind of are what they are, but they have the potential to be better. But I will say this. They have to win tonight. If they lose tonight, it's donezo, because there's no way they're going to get to 9-7 or 10-6 with a loss tonight. Because if they lose tonight, you're 4-6. That means with six games left, you have to win all six to get to 10, or 5 or 6 to get to 9. And they have games with Kansas City, Minnesota, and at Carolina coming up. So tonight is a must-win.
All right. And lastly, a couple of guys healed up, ready to come back. We saw Rashad Penny show some flash last week.
Yeah, he did.
And now you add Chris Carson. And as you wrote, I think DJ Fluker's back at starting guard.
Yep.
So how big is it getting those guys back? Because like you said, they need them and they got to win tonight.
I was really worried last week without Fluker because Fluker was so huge when he came back in week 3. But they ran really well. I mean, to me, you take away the 90 yards Wilson ran for, because those weren't designed runs, most of them. So you can't really credit the offensive line for that, as far as I'm concerned. But the rest of the rushing yards, the 180, were the product of the offensive line without Fluker. You had Fluker back. Green Bay's rushing defense at 22nd. Seattle's number one. Think about that. Seattle's number one in the NFL in rushing.
Amazing.
After
amazing.
2 years of the offensive line, after 2 years of the offensive line just being a mess, they are leading the NFL in rushing. I think they're going to throw a wave of running backs at Green Bay, and I think they're going to wear Green Bay down, and I think they're going to win this game by a touchdown. But, wow, you have to give John Schneider and Pete Carroll credit. And I've been saying this for a few weeks now. No matter what happens this year, even if they get in the playoffs, they're going to get spanked. They're not going to go to New Orleans and win. They're not going to go to Carolina or go to the Rams and win in the playoffs. But I think they've built the foundation going to the offseason with like $50 million in cap space to make a serious push next year to be a pretty elite team.
Yeah, those two guys have worked exceptionally well together since day one. Folks, yep. He's Aaron Fentress, NBC Sports Northwest, on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress. You enjoy the game tonight and travel safe, and as always, look forward to talking down the road, Aaron. Thanks for your time.
All right, buddy.
Take it easy.